This episode of Innovations in Education is brought to you by Verizon. Verizon is a global technology leader with more than two decades of experience focused on the technology needs of K-12 schools. The company serves as a trusted partner for thousands of schools across the U.S. Their ongoing collaboration with schools of all sizes gives them a unique perspective on the benefits of the evolving role of technology for student outcomes. From hybrid learning to cybersecurity to student safety and more. To find out more about Verizon's K-12 education solutions, be sure to go to their website, verizon.com. Okay, hello, and welcome to this eSchool News highlight reel of a recent webinar called Future Schools, the Power of Connection. My name is Kevin Hogan. I am the content director for eSchool News, and I'm happy you're here today. I recently had the pleasure of hosting three senior technologists from Verizon who touch on a variety of topics over the course of an hour, which includes cybersecurity, digital equity, and the future of edtech in general, while emphasizing Verizon's role in supporting schools through innovative solutions and reliable connectivity. They included Kim Mirabella. She is the Vice President of Business Development at Verizon, Wes Withrow, he's a Senior Client Partner at Verizon, and Scott Anderson, he's a Distinguished Architect at the company. While the next few minutes will give you a taste of the conversation, I encourage you to visit eSchool News and hit the webinar tab to find the title, Future Schools, the Power of Connection, up online. One of the first topics addressed in our conversation is the critical importance of cybersecurity in schools. Each of our panelists shared insights on the evolution of cybersecurity threats, the necessity of secure networks, and the role of AI in future security measures. They all emphasized that reliable connectivity is essential for protecting students and ensuring safe digital learning environments. Here's a snippet. Right, because there's kind of two sides to the coin when it comes to cybersecurity, right? I mean, there's the hardcore technical protections, the algorithms that are there, two-party authentication, all the various things that annoy users but protect right. protect their data, and then there's the other side of the coin, which is human behavior. I mean, it's not even necessarily about the technology, but it's about, and this is where AI can kind of slip in here too, as that gets more sophisticated, just fooling people into giving away passwords and getting in. Can you talk a little bit for our audience about is there one that's more important than the other? Or, I mean, is it in terms of strategies, in terms of protection, where would you start?
Maybe I'll jump in first. I'll do it kind of briefly, because what we're seeing right now is a lot around social engineering defense, right? So you just mentioned a moment ago about, you know, about just social engineering and just, you know, for example, right, one of the things from the DBIR report is the median time. So it takes about less than 60 seconds for someone to actually click on a phishing email for that attack. So imagine, you know, everyone within the, you know, educational system having emails from, you know, teachers, students, parents, to being vulnerable just to one kind of, you know, social engineering attack through phishing. So one of the areas where we help organizations get started is helping them understand kind of what an overall social engineering defense plan is, and then helping build capabilities around that. So starting with a specific use case and then building off of that use case to help them develop a strategy for the future.
And I'm just going to interject. I heard you use the DBIR report. And just to share with everybody on the call, the DBIR report is the Data Breach Investigation Report. So Verizon has a very large security practice, but what we do is we publish a report every quarter that talks about, like, what are the latest hacks, right? What's the behavior of these bad actors? It's free. It's online. In fact, what we'll do, we'll make it a point of sending that to everybody so that you have that post call. But I would encourage you to read it, because it's everything from physical security, you know, passwords, et cetera, to walking away from your computer without locking it. Just simple things all the way to, you know, more sophisticated things that are happening in the industry. And, you know, companies like Verizon, we have more internet traffic. You know, majority of the world's internet traffic traverses Verizon at some point. So we have to be really careful about network security as a foundation, but then we've also built a whole practice around helping our customers with security as well. But it is a free resource, and I just encourage you all to access it. We'll make sure you have the link and use it as you would like.
Next, the group discusses the ongoing efforts to bridge the digital divide, which was only exacerbated in recent years by the pandemic. Verizon's initiatives, including providing low-cost internet plans and donating devices to socioeconomically challenged schools, aim to ensure that all students have access to the digital tools they need for their education. Have a listen. You also mentioned digital equity and about, you know, during the pandemic, that was another real topic and issue that came to the forefront. You know, I remember interviewing tech directors back in April of 2020. They were getting in their cars and driving and handing out hotspots to students, where, like, even in districts where you would assume were wealthy and that a certain percentage of the students would, everyone would have access, there were a lot who still didn't have it. And it really, it made sure, you know, it put that issue, you know, front and center. So since that time, I know that Verizon has done a lot of work, industry has done a lot of work in terms of trying to solve those issues. Maybe you can talk a little bit about what you've seen out there on the front lines.
Absolutely. And so during the pandemic, we connected over 1.5 million students with, you know, hotspots, jetpacks, if you will, and in other mediums. But essentially, we found a couple of things. One, students weren't prepared, right? I mean, just because you hand them a jetpack doesn't mean they even know how to do email. That's, most kids don't know how to use email. I mean, they just swipe, right? Especially your primary grades, right? So those types of things. And then, you know, the teachers weren't prepared. You know, in many cases, the teachers skewed older and, you know, we're shying away from technology. Then there were different types of technology platforms. You guys, you know, lived through it firsthand. But some of the key learnings really led us to a couple of different things. One, from a network coverage perspective, we realized, right, that, you know, where we were focusing our investment and our build in major metropolitan areas, we realized that, you know, oh my goodness, the connectivity needs are becoming more rural, becoming more suburban. And so we had to change our network infrastructure strategy a bit, right? We're still focused on major cities, of course. But, you know, when you think about distance learning and learning from home, even from a homework perspective, right, kids are going to need access to the internet. And if they have access, do they have the network coverage, right, and making sure that that's the case. And so we've really spent the last couple of years really shoring up the network and making sure that we're forecasting properly the needs moving forward, right? So what are the trends that we're seeing? We're seeing, you know, certain populations of people move certain places. So that's one thing. The other thing is we realize that, you know, not everybody can afford, you know, internet. So we have actually launched some plans, which we call digital inclusion. And these are plans we make available to government agencies.